This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, Dave Ross of VSiN will join us. We will go over the NBA playoffs, the NHL playoffs, Major League Baseball. I'm sure he's going to gloat about his Mets, who are playing well right now. PGA Championship, so a lot to discuss with Dave. But I'll start with the NBA, and I'll get my thoughts here on the games for Monday in a second, get to some MLB here in a second. But just a very different conversation we'd be having, and it was very close to having that if the Nuggets were able to hold on and beat the Thunder in Game 4. It would have set up a very dramatic 3-1 Denver lead. OKC would be, you know, long shots, despite the fact that they're favorites in all these games, still not long shots, but sizable underdogs to win the series. And we'd be talking about how they're frauds, how they're just a regular season team. And you know what? We might still be having that conversation in a couple days because I don't know that that much separates these two teams. Three of the four games have been close. I know that OKC beat them by a million points in that second game, but it was 71-63 Denver early fourth quarter. And by the way, this was about as ugly a game as you'll ever see. I think at one point both teams were each 1 of 18 from three, which is crazy. Two things are crazy about that. The fact that they both have the same exact number is obviously wild and unusual, but the fact that they were both so bad from three, it was 17-8 OKC after the first quarter. And look at this stat. Let me think about this. Denver in the first quarter and fourth quarter combined scored 26 points. They actually had a good third quarter, scored 33, scored a little bit at the end of the second quarter, but 26 combined points for two quarters is basically unheard of. So OKC, now look, you can look at it this year if you're OKC and say, you know what, every team goes through one of these. You talk about this a lot in the NCAA tournament where every team faces, and Florida faced a million of these this year. UConn didn't face too many of them, or really any of them the past couple of years. But just about every team that wins the NCAA championship, and you can include the NBA champion to some extent here, faces a moment. I remember the Heat, the first year with LeBron and Wade, the first year they won a championship, I should say. They were down 2-1 to Indy, won Game 4. Talk was, you know, should they trade people? Does this fit work? All of that. They won that series. They won the championship. There was a 2015, the Warriors were down 2-1 in Memphis, a Game 4. They won that. They went on to win a championship, never had to play a Game 7. Never lost again in that series. These teams face these moments. So maybe this was OKC's moment that they had to overcome, and they'll look back in a month or so when they're in the finals or they won the championship and say, you know what, we were down 8 in Denver. We were down 2-1 in the series. We rallied, and this was our moment. It's possible. It's possible. I certainly would not look to lay the 10.5 in Game 5, and they are minus 525 favorites at DraftKings, minus 600 at FanDuel to win the series. There is just not that much that separates these teams when you watch the first four games. It's SGA and not a lot else in terms of the offense. That was the concern from a lot of people before the series or coming into the playoffs, just in general, that OKC is a little bit of a paper tiger, a front runner, use whatever term you want, that when things get tight, okay, you can count on SGA, but do they have the experience? Do they have that second scorer? And they answered it today to some extent, but there are still some questions about them. So I would expect them to get through this series. I mean, look, they are minus five plus favorites, minus 500 plus favorites, but them just penciling them in to just win this series, I think, is dangerous, and penciling them into the finals, although I think they'll get there, is not just an automatic for me. They're Denver with Jokic not playing well. And by the way, the way Mark Jones, if you've listened to these games, the way Mark Jones, who does the games for ESPN, ABC, for whatever reason, as a personal axe to grind with Jokic, he was killing him on Friday night. And in just every chance he got to take a shot at him, he would. He called his performance miserable, atrocious. There was a touch foul where I think it was Dort who flopped. And he said, oh, Jokic bowls him over, but they didn't call it. He has, for whatever reason, I guess it's a longstanding thing where he just has an axe to grind with Jokic. He's terrible doing the games too. He is impossible to listen to. He's corny. He tries to be funny. He has all these one-liners. He's awful. He's one of my least favorite announcers, but Jokic has not shot well. He's not played well and missed two big free throws down the stretch here when it was 84-80. Jokic missed two free throws. Then Gordon went to the line and he missed a free throw. So Denver really had their chances to end this series, not end the series, but put their foot on the throat in this series and win this game. Again, up eight in the fourth quarter, missing free throws left and right. Jokic couldn't shoot, couldn't score in the first, couldn't score in the fourth. So it would have been a fascinating 24, 48 hours if this was 3-1 Denver. It feels like OKC survived the game and probably survived the series, but it's now a best of three, and you do still have the best player in the world on the other team. I would only look towards taking Denver plus 10.5 in game five. That will be on Tuesday. As far as these Monday games, and as we're recording this, the Pacers are absolutely burying the Pacers, so they look to hold on here and take a 3-1 lead. That will be an interesting series here coming up if this score holds, because you're not dead if you're Cleveland. You get five at home, you get seven at home, but this would be actually the first win for an Eastern Conference team in this round. It was 6-0 for the road teams coming in, which leads me into Knicks Celtics here. I guess I did take the Knicks plus the points in game two, but I've been wrong about this series every which way. I thought Celtics were winning five. Knicks win the first two. Once they're up 2-0, I said, you know, home court's probably going to be enough to get them home. They'll figure out a way to win this series. Maybe they still will. I wouldn't look to lay the 6.5 here with the Celtics. I would only look to take it. I think, again, they'll probably play a better game. It'd be hard to play worse. They played a terrible game on Saturday. And so much of it was Celtics. I mean, it gets talked about all the time, but it gets talked about for good reason. It's just the three-point shooting. I mean, at one point on Saturday, Boston was 6 of 7 from three before you could even blink. The first two games, they couldn't make a three. They're going to take so many threes. You know, it's almost like a boxer who just goes for the knockout. If he's going to connect on one of them, he's going to knock you out. And if he's not going to connect, he's not going to knock you out, and he's not going to win. So I would look to take the 6.5. I think we'll finally get a good game. Not finally get a good game. The first two were really good, but I think we'll see a competitive game. I'll just leave it at that. I think we'll see a competitive game here. Again, so much of it depends on the three-point variance that it's hard to really predict here with the Celtics-Knicks. But I will say this, the winner of this game probably wins the series. I don't think Boston comes back from 3-1, even though they would have 5-7 at home. They haven't been a great home team at all. Knicks with three chances to win one, I think would win the series. If it's 2-2, I have a hard time seeing the Knicks rally and win two out of three. But again, Boston is a very strange team. Really good on the road, not great at home. Shoot a million threes per game. So I mean, they could just shoot their way in or out of any single game, but I would take the Knicks plus the 6.5. And then T-Wolves Warriors, I mentioned this when Curry got hurt. I didn't even wait till Thursday to record this. I didn't even wait for game two to talk about this. I just assumed they were going to win game two. Minnesota, they did. They won easily. Could have easily lost game three. We're trailing late. It looked like for a second, all the lower seeds were going to be down 2-1 heading into game four here, which I don't know if it's ever happened before, but it didn't come to that. Despite a great Butler performance, Draymond gave him nothing, and the Warriors just can't score without Curry. They just can't score. It felt like that was the one the Warriors needed to get. It really did. They had a chance. They had a lead late, led by 5 or 6 in the fourth quarter, and just could not hold on. Minnesota actually wins, but didn't cover, especially depending on when you got the number. I'm sure people saw that where Kuminga hits a three. They don't foul, and it lands on 5. Closed at 6. So to me, Warriors team total under 96.5 is the play. I just think they are so limited offensively without Curry. And that seemed like their one chance to steal one. And the path here for Golden State was, all right, Curry's out. We get a split somehow, and we just bide our time. And maybe by game 5, we can get Curry back. It sounds like he wouldn't even be back till game 6. Anyway, at this point, I don't think we're getting a game 6. I don't think we're getting a game 6. I think this is going to be Minnesota winning game 4. And then if it goes back to Minnesota with 3-1 with no Curry and that team with a chance to go to the conference finals for back-to-back years for a franchise that hasn't had a lot of success, them going to conference finals back-to-back years, both in unconventional, surprising fashion. It looked like Minnesota was headed for the plane a lot of this year. Last year it was out of nowhere. This is really be two straight trips to the conference finals, both in surprising nature. I do think that's going to be the case. Again, Warriors team total under, and I would probably look towards laying the 5.5. I know Warriors are good defensively, especially without Curry. That is the one thing. They do play a little bit better defense. They just put all these defensive lineups out there, and they can muck the game up, and that was another game that was really ugly Saturday night, especially the first half. But I just think that the dam kind of broke here. I think this series is over, and it's tough because I think if they had Curry, they probably win game 3. They probably have a good chance to win the series. They were up 1-0 when he got hurt. And you hate to think this way because Curry's such a fun player to watch, such a likable player. might be Curry's last chance ever at a conference finals. He might never make a conference finals again. And look, if he doesn't, it's fine. He won all these championships. What, won four championships? Great career, been to another finals. Won one before Durant, won one after Durant. Just an all-time great player. But it's at his age, with how good the West is, when you look at OKC and Minnesota, and the Lakers have Luka, and all these Denver with Jokic, the Spurs eventually with Wembanyama will build a really contending team as soon as, assuming, I should say, that Wembanyama is okay physically. It's no lock that he ever gets back to a conference finals. This might have been his last chance to get there, and he might have gotten there if not for this injury. So I think Timberwolves wrap this up and win this in five. Before we get to Dave, just quickly on the baseball, the Rockies are becoming the story. First of all, they win Sunday, their seventh win of the year. I guess they've been a story for a bit, but now 7-33. I was thinking of this. What number? They update these season win totals every day, over under wins. Like, what number would you need? And I'll ask Dave Ross this coming up. What number would you need to bet the over on the Rockies? I honestly think they could probably end something like, I don't know, 35 wins, 38 wins in that range, because they're so bad. They can't pitch, they can't hit. Also, they're in a ballpark that accentuates it, because there's so much scoring in Coors that, if you're a bad team, you want to play something that play an environment that suppresses the runs, where it's a big ballpark, nobody can hit, wind blows in, whatever. You want 3-2, 4-3, 2-1 games, and just up the variance and just be able to steal a low scoring game. The fact that all of these games are relatively high scoring and it's such a run happy environment really hurts you when you're the worst team. And boy, they are bad. And then you throw in the fact that the division's so good, with the Padres, the Dodgers, the Giants, the D-backs, the rest of the National League is good. I don't know. I don't know that they get to 40 wins. So I would still look towards an under. If it's in the low 40s, I really think this is maybe, I don't know, 37, 38 win team. It's really, really that bad. White Sox set the record last year with 41 wins. That record might be broken. They fired Bud Black, the manager, and a lot of people. And I get it. I share the sentiment. A lot of the consensus take was, well, it's not his fault. What did you want him to do? I agree with that. It's not like replacing him is going to fix it. It's not like this is supposed to be a winning team. And if, it doesn't matter who's managing the team, they're not going to win. That being said, they're 7-33. What did he do to deserve to keep the job? I mean, it's pro sports. You can't just lose every day and get to keep the job and say, well, I have bad players, I can just lose every game. That's not how it works either. So I'm sure at some point he's, on some level, he's relieved to be moving on, because it's just, what a miserable experience. You show up every day and you just get your brains beat in. He's, been managed good teams before. He's a pretty well-respected guy. I don't agree with the idea that you can just lose every game and you get a free pass because your players are bad. I mean, player development is part of it too, and you can't argue that, like, the player development side of it has been great. So I don't know where they go, but to me, that is to say they are bad is an understatement. Pretty good. A couple of interesting games here for Monday. Skeens is in New York pitching against the Mets. Mets are red hot. Rockies are in action in Texas. Texas is -285 against Colorado. And I do think, from a betting perspective, you just probably have to figure out a way to bet against them every day. Money line, run line, a little of both. Opponent team total over. They're just that bad, where it's an opportunity. And you could say the books have caught up. They've adjusted. Yes, but when you lose every day, it's hard. It's hard to adjust. This win on Sunday against the Padres was just their second win of May, their seventh of the season. So interesting, interesting from that perspective, in terms of how you adjust their number, because they are just that bad, historically bad. But coming up, let's talk a little NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, some Major League Baseball with Dave Ross. That is next. This is Should Have Been More Podcast. All right, you can catch him, VSiN, by the books, morning 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. Eastern, where he does a fantastic job, breaks down everything baseball, basketball, a lot of UFC, golf. He does it all, and he joins us now. Dave Ross. Dave, what's going on, man? Long time no chat. How are you?
I am well. I am rested. Had a nice week of vacation back from your coast, from the East Coast, back out here out west. And I tell you, man, it's like I go away, Mets kind of keep on winning. Hasn't been the best start to May, but not bad either. And Will, I got to tell you, should I start to be optimistic that really they're going to hold this pitching staff's going to hold? And all of a sudden we can see this through all the way through the All-Star break, get some guys back, and really be a player come October again.
I was worried we weren't going to get to the Mets. I'm glad we were able to get it to eventually. I'm glad we were able to squeeze it in. Yeah, no, they're impressive. That's been Stern's reputation. We'll get to some NBA and NHL. But that's been Stern's reputation, where he can just kind of make chicken salad out of chicken shit. And that's been his MO, and he's done it. I mean, look at the ERAs of some of these guys. You never heard of Griffin Canning, again, good on Sunday. You just go up and down the rotation. Peterson, you name it, McGill, they've gotten good performances out of guys you wouldn't necessarily expect it from.
I will say this, though, probably my favorite thing just about you personally that's happened in this offseason is the fact that you have to lament that Juan Soto is not in pinstripes. Like that, as a Met fan, we don't have a whole lot as little brother, right, to the Yankees. So, like, when we get one of those guys and he wasn't hitting early, now he's starting to look like Soto again. There's so much reason to be optimistic as a long-term Mets fan, not short-term. As a long-term Met fan, Will, I don't know if there's any playable. I haven't played any numbers in the futures market on the Mets yet this year. I'm thinking about dipping my toe in because I still don't fully believe. But, man, I got to tell you, it is a different feeling the last year and a half being a Mets fan.
Yeah, and you've gotten stars in the past, but usually it's the past your prime. It's the Robbie Alomars, the Movons. Right. This is a guy who's just, in his prime, entering his prime, and he's so good. The people that were worried about him, it's like, man, the last thing you have to ever worry about is Juan Soto not hitting. Juan Soto's going to hit.
Yeah.
And I sat here all winter like, oh, Mets plus 230. That's a little too long, but the division's good. Do I really want to bet it? Of course, I didn't bet it. I do think they're going to win the division, but we'll revisit that in a second. NBA, okay. The game's on Monday. Knicks and Celtics. I'll just start there.
Yeah.
Boy, I've kind of given up predictions. I thought Celtics would win a short series. Then they lose the first two. I said, you know what? I think the Knicks are going to win this. So, oh man, your guess is as good as mine. Celtics laying 6.5. Did they stabilize the series? Are they back on track and they're going to advance, or not so fast, my friend?
I think it's more Lee Corso, not so fast, my friend. I think when you literally steal two in the most inexplicable fashion, the way they did in Boston with those first two of your Knicks backer, and then you get rolled in game three, almost to be expected. I got to think this is Tibbs's shot to say, did those two 20-point comebacks late third quarter Boston mean anything? Because if you get rolled again in game four, you're right back to where you were, obviously, to be best of three at that spot, with two being in Boston. And I do think that flips it all the way back to where the Celtics would be not as big a favorite as they were pre-flop, but certainly close. So I think you're going to get the best shot from the Knicks. I would rather have the points in pocket come tomorrow night in that one, just because they know that all that work to make this historic comebacks really go for naught if they don't win game four. I'd be surprised if this is another blowout. I think it's going to be much closer. I don't think we get some wild swings like we saw in one and two. I think this could be kind of nip tuck the whole way. I think I'd rather have the points in this one. And I wouldn't be shocked if the Knicks figure out a way to push this to 3-1.
Oh, interesting. So you don't necessarily just automatically pencil the Celtics into the next round. Who would you pick right now? You're the Mets season fate. You're lofty Vincent Sauer. You have to pick the winner of the series. Who are you picking? You going chalk or no?
Okay, I'd still go chalk if you made me put my futures on it. But I think even at 3-1, the C's obviously wouldn't be dead. And then I know historically, down 3-1, we don't see it very often, obviously. But I do think that even at 3-1, knowing that two would be in Boston, I can't see the Knicks. I know they won the first two there. I couldn't see them winning a 5 or 7. Then it would all come back to a game 6, theoretically, in New York to wrap this thing up if you're a Knicks backer. I'd almost rather look for the Knicks to win game 4 than come back on the C's down 1-3. And if they still are the reigning defendings, if they really are just that much better, then they still should win the final three. I don't know what that number looks like, Will, but that's where I'd probably be intrigued to go back on the seaside down 1-3.
T-Wolves, Warriors, I just felt like the Warriors were super live to win this series. Warriors were super live to win this series. On their way to winning game one, then all of a sudden Curry hamstring, and I know, Gil Alexander's a Warriors guy. I texted him, I said, man, I know you're a Warriors guy, but I don't see a path for the Warriors, not only to win a series. I'm not sure they win another game. They almost stole game three. That, to me, felt like the one they had to have. They're just so limited without Curry. Do you see any path for them winning this game, winning the series, anything?
I don't. And the problem is, it's kind of like what we saw today on Sunday here with Denver in game four. You got to win those ones where you're grinding it out, it's ugly, and feel a way to steal one more to realistically have a shot to win those. And I look at this and I go, man, I got FOMO of Minnesota. They were 20-1 before the playoffs began. And we talked about them, Will. Never played it. Thought about it. Didn't play it. And now it is kind of amazing that yes, Steph is still the greatest shooter we've ever seen in the history of the game. We know what he's doing even at this advanced age. But without him, you go, Jimmy Butler, like, this is why we got you. Can you go win two games with Jimmy Butler against Minnesota? Like, Minnesota wasn't supposed to be this daunting task. Even if you take away a Steph Curry, you think you'd be alive to win one more game. But I'm more with you. I think this might be Minnesota the rest of the way. And can you imagine they kind of get an easy break to the finals, if you will? OKC looking as unsure as they are right now against Denver. I still think they're going to get out of that probably in 6 years against Denver. We see the offensive inefficiency here of the Nuggets. And Jokic looks like he's worn down a little bit. I mean, it is amazing that OKC might be able to survive. And if they do, Minnesota OKC final, I think that's where we're headed out west. It's not really as sexy as we thought OKC would look, but I think at the end of the day, it's still going to be those two. And man, I wish I had 20 to one in pocket to figure out a nice way to make some profit, but I don't have it. So I am starting to think, like Jonathan Von Tobel says, in the end, it's going to be the OKC Invitational.
Yeah, and look, every champion goes through this. I remember the Warriors, they won that first title in 2015. It was Memphis in the second round, same sort of scenario. They're down 2-1, game four on the road. And sometimes these game fours, people always talk about, 1-1, game three is where it swings. Game fours can be a tricky one where that's where the series identifies itself. It either goes to 3-1 and one team takes control, or it's 2-2 and the series flips. Was this OKC finally answering the moment? They were down, seven in the second half. They could have easily just, a couple joker buckets here or there. They're down 3-1, and they're probably not getting off the mat. Now, all of a sudden, 2-2, five is at home, seven at home. Is this where they're home free, or do they still have situations where they're just a little tight late and they don't have enough offense besides SGA?
I think they stole this one back, right? When you hold Denver to 8 points in the first quarter and somehow you're down at the end of three and looking like it's dire straits, you got to be kidding. Like, this is the number one seed out west. This was the -$1.15 betting favorite going into the second season. How is this possible? What am I missing? And then all of a sudden to flip it on the road against a championship metal team. I got to say this too. I do think if Mike or Michael Malone is still coaching the Nuggets, they don't lose game four. Like, I am thoroughly convinced of that. We'll never know. But I do think that's where some of that championship metal you're missing from the bench a little bit from Denver's side. And it can't just be Joker's tired, Murray, maybe not his best performance. Those sort of things. You've got to, if you're Denver and you're serious about winning this thing, you win game four. And when you don't, and now you have the prospects of two of the last three in OKC, I would be stunned if this thing goes seven. I got to think OKC, who has not played their best basketball to date yet, except for the one big blowout winning game two. I don't expect them to play another clunker like this, and yet they still win on the road. I kind of like OKC in six.
It's funny. If we are a few baskets away from Denver winning this game and us having a totally different conversation. OKC frauds. They're a regular season team. Regular season's a joke now in the NBA. We shouldn't have bought into them. And the conversation from Denver, we'd be talking about how these coaches just don't matter because this guy, they basically picked this guy out of the stands 10 minutes before the playoffs started. He beats Tyronn Lue in a game seven, a coach that's won a championship, a roster with the Clippers everyone loves. And now he's out coaching or at least beating Dagnall, who everybody loves too. It would have been a very interesting conversation had Denver hang on to one, but obviously not the case.
Well, what do you think, Will? Because I do think it matters, right? And it looked like for the longest point, you're right, that it didn't look like it mattered. But these are the type of situations like that in the fourth quarter at home with the lead that I don't know. I can't put my finger on. I'm not in that locker room. I'm certainly not in that in those huddles. But I do think Malone makes a difference there. I don't know how much Calvin Booth as a GM would make a difference, but I do think the bench, maybe they didn't respond to him anymore. I mean, that's what all the talk was, right? That maybe the message had gotten stale. That message helped you win a championship. I got to think this is where it shows up in those little moments like that.
I thought it was extremely harsh firing him, very almost to the point where it's unfair. Guy won a championship, less than 2 years ago. And look, they got upset in a game seven last year. It happens. And then you won 50 games this year. I thought it was out of nowhere, harsh, all of those things. That being said, the reason they lost today, they're just missing shots. I think they combined for 26 points in the first and fourth quarter. Jokic missed big free throws down the stretch. Then Gordon missed another one. There was a stretch where they missed three straight free throws. Mm-hmm. Is that coaching? I don't know. I just feel like with basketball, just the ball goes in or it doesn't. And we sit here and we try to draw our own conclusions from the, oh, this team's clutch, or, you know, Boston can't do this or that. It's like, you know, sometimes you hit your threes and you look great and the coach looked great and everything looks great. And sometimes you miss and everyone looks bad. I just think it's sometimes as simple as making and missing.
I'll say this too. I know that wherever Mike or Michael Malone is and was watching today, he's going to say, man, sucks, pulling for my guys. Deep down inside, he's glad they lost. I knew he'll never admit it.
Absolutely.
They'll never say it, right? But they want you to know, hey, you guys miss me yet? And maybe they don't, but I guarantee you, deep down inside, he's like, I would have made the difference.
100%, just human nature.
Yep.
You have any thoughts on hockey? Carolina laying -238, big favorites against Washington, who's almost 2-1 dogs. Total 5.5, and then Edmonton -130 over Vegas. Total 6.5 there. Thoughts on either one of those?
I'm a homer. Obviously, DC covered the Caps for a long, long time there. Rooting for those guys. Don't think they're good enough. Like, you kind of saw, even though they were the, you know, number one seed and you got the best record and all those things in regular season, Ovechkin, amazing story, becoming the all-time goal scorer. I just feel like maybe now you're starting to see that this is not, at this juncture, the best team in the East. So I'd be surprised if DC gets off the deck here and can even force this to a 7. The other one is the most intriguing thing. I'm sitting there, I get back, and I'm watching last night the fights for UFC 315, and you've got Vegas on the big screen against Edmonton on Saturday night. And, Will, I mean, they're down 2-0 before you can bat an eye and down 2-0 in the series, and you're thinking, oh, my goodness, this is going to be maybe an Edmonton sweep. And then to tie it up as quickly as they did with those two goals at the end of the first period and then kind of stalemate everything 4-4 and to get the game winner with under 2 seconds to go in regulation. And it looked at first and whether or not did it go in and we couldn't tell. They had a look at the review and you knew right away that it was a good goal. I got to think now if Aiden Hill plays a little bit better, and I know, look, it's a great offense, right? I mean, whenever you've got Connor McJesus coming at you down the other end, all the offensive firepower that Edmonton has, it's hard to say get better goaltending. But if they get just a framework of that and they stay out of the penalty box, then I think that Vegas is really live to flip this script here. So as big a swing as you can make down 2-0 in a series, 2-0 in a game, and then win it in the manner and they did, I have a sneaking suspicion we might be 2-2 coming back to Vegas.
So it sounds like the +210 on the series price would intrigue you. The Jets +260, the Capitals +400. Any of those worth a bet?
I don't think I could do it with my boys from DC. Love to, but in 4-1, so juicy, Will. But I think I'd rather look to Vegas. And by the way, I have, when Edmonton was down 0-2, talking to our guy Jonathan Davis at VSiN, of course, I said then at 0-2, back then you could have bet Edmonton to beat the Kings in the first round north of 4-1 to win that series. And they hadn't even lost on home ice yet. And I, again, FOMO, didn't make that wager. And now I look at it and I go, man, that might be the backbreaker. Like, if they don't get game 4 tomorrow night in Edmonton, I'd rather be on the plus money here on the Vegas side going forward. That's the only wager I can make right now, because I do have to think they still have the advantage goaltending if they can somewhat stalemate that top line of Edmonton and stay out of the box. They're the better team. Then I think Vegas is going to win that series.
I'll switch gears to baseball and a couple other things before we get out of here. Before we get to the Mets, you already went on the Mets. We can go another direction.
Oh, what?
At what number would I need to hang for you to take a Colorado Rockies adjusted season win total over? What would make you hit submit? And that's a good question. You are allowed to steal that for your show tomorrow.
I'm so stealing that, Will. 38? Like, do they win 40?
I don't think so.
I don't think they win 40. I mean, 38. I'd be double dog dare tempted to do it. But I mean, did you see this coming, Will? Like, I knew they were bad.
No.
After the White Sox last year, you set the infamy record. It's going to get shattered this year by Colorado. Like, I know they fired Bud Black. What's that going to do?
Right.
I mean, I have no idea. We saw Pittsburgh play a little bit better when they fired Shelton. They went 2 out of 3 over the weekend. I have no idea if that's going to make any difference. I just look up and down. Like, what the hell happened to Chris Bryant? You know, you just go up and down the roster, and I go, they don't have any good players. There's just nobody in the roster that makes me say, yeah, I can book this team for 40. I think you hung 38, I'd be tempted. Call up all the kids. Just call them all up and say, "Do you guys want to play baseball? Is there somebody in the stands that you say you want to pitch the fifth inning?" I mean, this is as bad as I've seen a major league roster in quite some time.
It is. It really is. And the problem is, well, there's multiple problems. They can't hit. They can't pitch. That's not a good start. But you play in a ballpark where there's a lot of runs scored, so it exacerbates the difference. Like, you want to play in a pitcher's ballpark where every game's 2-1 or 3-2, and you can steal games. When there's a bunch of runs scored, that widens the gap between you and your opponent. So, and they've stopped developing hitters. To your point, you used to be, all right, you're going to go in there, it's going to be 9-8 or 8-7. They got a bunch of good hitters, you know, going back to whatever, Dante Bichette, Galarraga through the years, Charlie Blackman. They've always had good offensive teams. They can't really pitch, but they outslug it. Now they can't even outslug it, and they have no pitching. It's just like the worst of both worlds.
Well, one of the best lines, I can't remember verbatim, in Bull Durham is they say, what's our record, Charlie? 6-18. How in the hell did we ever win six? That's the way I go get up with this team. How do they win any games? They beat the Padres today. I go, how did that happen? Like, I'm generally surprised if I look up and see Colorado won a game. And then I'm mesmerized by it. I got to look through the box score because I'm not watching Rockies baseball to see how on earth it actually happens. Because, you know, you score double-digit runs if you're the Rockies. I mean, you should print the shirts and make a statue, because it just does not happen on the regular. There's no part of that team that says to me, yeah, they're going to book them for 40. I don't see it.
Have you been playing against them frequently, regularly, putting them in the money on par with something? I mean, I feel like we're obligated to have some form of bet against them, whether it's their opponent team total to go over, a money line run. I mean, you gotta, it's a point where you just, again, you don't want to be late to the party and feel like you missed it. I felt like that last year with the White Sox, but they're that bad where you got to figure out some way to bet against them every day, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, you could do the run line, but I even think that the books have caught up and you're really not getting good pricing on the run lines against the Rockies. If you just want to blindly bet it, I do think if you just blindly bet it the rest of the way, I do think you'll have positive ROI. If you want to blanket that the rest of the way, you probably make out. But I will say the books, man, they're so quick on this stuff, right? They know that's probably the way that you want to play this on a daily basis against the Rocks. And you're probably still not even getting as good a value as you should.
They are in action Monday in Texas. Texas minus 285 favorites.
What's the run line price?
Not up yet. I'm sure it'll be minus 285 at home, probably minus 150, minus 160, something like that.
I mean, think about that. And so you're only getting 8 at-bats, right?
You're only getting 8 at-bats. Tough.
So now I got to look at what? There's some markets you can find Rangers not to bat in the ninth.
Right.
If that shaves it off a little bit, maybe that's the way to go. But, I mean, you really got to dig deep to try to find the best numbers against the Rocks.
What is one other big picture baseball takeaway from the first 6 weeks or so of the season?
So disappointed in our Cincinnati Reds. Two games under at this point. Hunter Green goes out. My heart sank when I saw that on vacation. That's a team I'm heavily invested in. Over win total 78.5. Right now we're right about that marker. Was hoping to have it had a nice run at the beginning of the month. And then all of a sudden you hit the skids here and it's looked really bad in May. So my concern there is, do the Reds, because the Cubs aren't running away, which is kind of nice right now. Do the Reds and Tito Francona say, we're not sellers? What are they going to do at the deadline? Because you look up here, and we're already going to be in mid-May before you know it. And once you get to June, get close to that deadline, that's when I start to worry about future totals for teams I might be invested in. Are they going to be buyers? So they're not traditionally that type of team. That's what worries me. Hopefully they at least, you know, stand pat, because they do have some pitching that I think some teams might say, hey, you interested in selling? And if the Reds sell, I'm dead.
It's tough, dude. They're only four back in the loss column, three and a half out. So it's not like, you know, they got some huge hole to climb. But yeah, and it's tough now because the deadline, there's just so many teams that make the playoffs. So there's just fewer sellers because you're like, all right, who's not in the mix? Okay, you want somebody from the Rockies? The Marlins can maybe give you somebody, but there, you know, the Angels can maybe give you somebody. There's not that many non-contenders.
But who's going to, like, think about this from a wild card perspective. If they can't win the Central, by the way, I did play 9-1 on the Reds to win the Central a couple weeks ago. Looked great, and they moved right to one game back, and now they've slipped back to four. Because I go, I don't know that they can win a wild card, because you're probably going to get, what, three out west. You're going to get two in the east. We'll figure out if the Braves can ever figure out what the hell they're doing. And then you kind of feel like the Cubs, if they can't win the division, might be a wild card. So I think it might be really hard. I kind of feel like it's Central or bust. Might be the same for the Cardinals. Where did this come from? From St. Louis.
Right.
I didn't see any of this coming. We thought they might be the worst team in that division. Obviously, that's been Pittsburgh. So a little bit surprised by the jockeying of position here. Keep waiting for the Braves to wake up. They haven't done it yet. Lose a couple in Pittsburgh. Those are bad losses. They all count the same down the stretch. So I kind of look at the Reds and say, just don't sell. Hang in there. Maybe you can catch the Cubs. And I think their big move has been Kyle Tucker in the offseason. Do they reload? Do they push in with guys they might not even re-sign and say, we'll just get a rental? Maybe. But if they don't, with all their pitching injuries right now, I think the Cubs are gettable.
Yeah. Certainly a one-bid league. I wouldn't think that they're getting a wild card out of the Central. What about the American League? Because, man, Yankees, they're pretty good, but maybe a little better than I thought. Although I thought they'd be, you know, decent. Williams has been a disaster, and rotation isn't great, but they can hit. They've got Judge. The rest of the American League, I mean, unless you believe in these teams in the Central, that they've played well. The West is kind of, there's a lot of parity. There's just a lot of parity, a lot of mediocrity in general. Do you buy that the Red Sox will take off? Do you have any sleeper team in the American League, or is it just, you know, the old cliche of whoever gets hot in October?
I had a beautiful ticket on the Kansas City Royals to have the best record in the month of May, and they were 8-1 2 days ago. Ooh. And now they're 8-3. And it's just two little losses like that to the Red Sox the last couple of days. And all of a sudden, we forget about the ticket for a second. They got to win to keep pace with Detroit. Detroit happened to lose those same two games as well, so don't lose any ground there. But Detroit does feel like the real deal, right? I mean, they look like they can actually hit this year. Obviously, you got the front end starting pitching like Detroit has. They're going to be a tough out. But Kansas City's pitching, I think their starting pitching is really good. I really do. Now, they've got to wake up offensively. And there's another team now that kind of like the comparison, the Spider-Man meme maybe with Cincinnati. Will they go get a bat? Again, they've done this, though, traditionally, like 2015, right? They've made moves when they feel like they're close and you have, outside of Shohei Ohtani, maybe the best player in baseball. I know Soto and Judge are going to make, and Lindor will make cases too, but Bobby Witt Jr. is that dude. If you get another guy in the middle of that line, I love Sally Perez, but you know, is that really enough in the middle of that lineup for Kansas City? I don't think so. If they go get another bat, I think they might be able to contend and push the Tigers down the stretch.
What any, you mentioned you have some UFC thoughts. Anything UFC coming up, or just big picture thoughts you want to get out there?
Just wanted to mention this. I'm watching the fight on Saturday night, and I played JDM Jack Della Maddalena against Bilal Muhammad to win the championship plus $1.70. Cash the ticket. Will, I just wanted to ask you this question, because in MMA or individual sports, so different from team sports, when you have to handicap the mental, forget about the numbers, forget about wins, losses, all the antiquated things that we can look at on day in, day out. When you have to get inside fighters' minds, like Bilal Muhammad won the title, and I bet on him at plus $2 against Leon Edwards because I knew he was going to wrestle. And then he comes out and he says, I'm not going to wrestle JDM. I'm going to throw my Canelo Alvarez hands at him. And I went, well, then I'm going to back the dog. And then, of course, we have a new champion today. Like, I go back to Mark Wohlers almost 30 years ago getting beat on his second best pitch against Jim Leyritz. Do you ever go, why do athletes talk themselves out of the easiest pathway to success, whether it's a pitcher on his second best pitch, whether it's an individual sport like MMA, where you take away your greatest strength for no other reason than you want to do something different? It is fascinating to handicap individual sports, because I do think it's so different where you can cover up for one guy on 11 on a side in the NFL, one guy 9 in Major League Baseball. But when it's just one person, Will, sometimes I go, what in the hell are you thinking?
What in the hell are you thinking for the PGA coming up, the golf?
I hate to say this because, you know, I want to say that, you know, Rory, now that he gets off from the Augusta and a good heads, he owns that golf course. And I know he's co-favorites right now with Scottie Scheffler, about 5-1 out there. And I don't want to play 5-1s. I just don't. Rory should be the favorite. He should actually be the betting favorite over Scottie. He's won 4 times in this track. So if there's ever a comfort zone for a guy, it's going to be Rory McIlroy down there in North Carolina. So I'm rooting against it because I'm already starting to get that Ryder Cup feel from Rory come Bethpage Black in your neck of the woods. Come September, he's been throwing out some of the Euro stuff. We saw Sepp Straka get a win on tour today, another European winning. So Euros are running hot right now in the PGA Tour. And if Scottie Scheffler is our red, white, and blue, wave the flag. Hey, Uncle Sam, step your game up. Euros are coming. And I would say, if you made me wager Scottie versus Rory down there at PGA, I won't admit it in a court of law, but I would back the European.
All right. You don't have a sleeper? Nobody you bet? Nobody you're looking at longer price here?
I haven't made any sleepers yet, any long shot bombs yet. But I will say Justin Thomas, not a long shot, but JT's playing really good golf. Competed again this weekend down there here in the signature event. So his game is right there, obviously finally winning on tour a couple weeks ago. I think JT would be a solid placement, maybe a top 10 that I'd look at. But look, Scotty on his worst day is a top 10. Rory, I'd be stunned if he's outside of it. So I kind of look at it and I go, man, those are three big dogs already, potentially in a top 10. Good luck filling in the rest of the gaps with the other seven.
Dave, you're the best man. VEASAN by the book, 7-10 Eastern. Where else can we find your insightful, brilliant analysis?
Oh, I love it. D-Raw Sports. I like to have a good time on X, as you well know. And I miss our old segment, defending our tweet. Because you've been, I got to say, some of the tweets I've seen you post are absolutely fantastic. Are you doing like a second bit now where you kind of just throw abstract things against the wall, like maybe a Taco Bell commercial? I've seen some really creative stuff out of you.
Just trying to be more active on there, trying to just a little more stream of consciousness.
It's fantastic. Keep it up.
Dave, you're the best, man. Hopefully we'll do it again soon. Appreciate it.
Anytime, brother.
Rate, review, subscribe, goldboys.com, where you can check out the Discord. We will be back Wednesday. See you then.